Hi, everybody. It's episode 503 of PodQuest.
Hey!
It is Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. I am Chris. With me is Druten.
Hello.
And Walnut.
Yeah, I'm here.
And it's a miserable day in the neighborhood.
It sure is.
Do both of you work from home?
Yep. Not today, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't. You don't on Wednesdays. Drew, did you hear that loud thunder or loud lightning strike earlier today?
I did not.
Was it one at like 4:30?
It was like 3-ish. Yeah. 3:30, something like that. Yeah.
So
that was literally like right outside my house.
So there was one as I was coming home at about 4:30 that actually made me jump. It was so loud. Like I was coming through the circle.
Mine was at around 4 that I experienced.
Actually, like, yeah, this one was probably closer to 4. It was like between 4 and 4:15.
It was, honestly, it was just before 4 o'clock, but it was probably the same one, because it was the only lightning strike all fucking day. But, like, I'm on the phone with someone with work, and I just see a flash out my window, and then, I'm just like, fuck! Save my shit real quick, save my shit! Because I don't have my UPS set up for my work. I don't have my UPS set up at all right now, but it wouldn't be set up for my work shit. Because I don't give a shit about work. But yeah, it was weird, and I missed the sun, because we haven't seen sun in like 3 days, and it's just been gross out.
Yeah.
So, my brother works at the ballpark. Mm-hmm. The game was supposed to be 1 o'clock today, got moved to 4. He's been there since 11, a little bit before 11:30. The game has now been moved till like 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all overtime for him today, apparently. So he's like, fuck it, whatever. Keep delaying the game. Keep me here. It's just all overtime.
Yeah, that's nice. That's awesome. Yeah.
It is actually pretty cool. What is he doing while he's like got like no game going on? Just kind of hanging out?
I mean, they opened the gates at 2:30. So there's like people the stadium.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like a ton of people have just left at this point.
I mean, I'd imagine it's more a bunch of people have just never made it down. Because, like, the Phillies tweeted at, like, 3 that the game was being postponed further or delayed further. And then just a little bit ago, he sent it was 10 minutes before 6. It's anticipated to start between 7:30 and 7:45 now.
That's a bummer for people that wanted to see the Phillies game.
Mm-hmm.
When I got home, it wasn't really raining. Like, it was misting a little bit. So I quickly threw on a hoodie and grabbed Ben to take him on the walk first. And we got, like, right around the corner, and it just started downpouring. And didn't bring an umbrella because it wasn't really raining.
Of course.
Didn't put Ben's raincoat on him. And that poor boy does not like the rain. He doesn't really like water. Like, he doesn't enjoy getting wet. I've never seen him run the way he did to try and get home after going to the bathroom.
Buddies.
Like, he was, he immediately went to the bathroom when we got to the park, and then just turned around and just tried to, he was just jogging the whole way home. But he's old, so, like, his jogging's not all that fast.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, every once in a while, he would, like, stop to pee or something, just for a second, and I would get, like, a few steps ahead of him, and he would just, like, charge forward. Like, no, we're not stopping. Just keep walking while I pee. It'll be fine.
Yeah. That's Chase right now. Like, if I let him out the back door, he will stare out and then turn. He'll step out, turn around, and come right back in. He won't have it unless he really has to go out. He won't have it.
Yeah, if it's like raining, and like we open the door, let them out. Kaylee will go out and she won't come right back in. Like, we actually have to call her because she likes the water. But sometimes Ben will like not realize it's raining, and he'll just go charging out the door, and he'll get like halfway between the front door and like the front gate and stop and look around and then turn around and run right back inside. He's like, why did you do this to me,
buddies?
But Rich, what's on the agenda?
On the agenda, we all watched Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind. Drew watched Nimona, which is a movie that I've actually always wanted to watch. I just haven't gotten around to it. Cobb, you played Balatro? I don't even know.
Balatro?
I don't know. I played Poppy Playtime, and I completed A Way Out. Well, Poppy Playtime Chapter 1 and 2. and completed a way out. And Drew got back into NHL 94, that 30-year-old game.
Yep.
Yeah, that is all correct. So what did you guys think of Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind?
Anime's weird, guys.
Isn't it?
I mean, it's fine. I didn't think it was too weird, but I'm also used to watching anime. I've also apparently seen this movie before and didn't realize that I've watched it before.
This is a little weirder than, because this is, I mentioned it to you guys in the chat earlier. This is pre-Studio Ghibli Miyazaki.
Yeah, but it's still Miyazaki, so it's still about the environment and save the planet and stuff like that. It still has like a heavy tone of a major worldly life lesson.
Yeah, I more meant this is basically his first original work. Because the movie that he did, well, movie-wise, the only other movie he had done before this was Lupin the Third, Castle of Cagliostro, which is a Lupin movie.
Yeah.
Like, that is a licensed property, I guess you'd call it. So this is like, this is his foray into like original storytelling with movies. And we mentioned it last week when we, or 2 weeks ago when we picked it, but a lot of people don't realize that this is actually based off of a manga that he also did. The difference is, though, the manga started in 82 and actually ran until 1994. So there is, and this movie came out in 84. So the manga ended 10 years later. It was not published consistently for 12 years, but it does, to my understanding, actually go a little bit further than the movie did, which makes sense because the movie does kind of end on a note of like, I feel like there's more there.
Yeah. The movie just kind of ends is what it is. And then if you watch the credits, watch during the credits, it feeds into a little bit of what happens after, which is like kind of more what I would want to know more about. It's like what happens after everything. But yeah, I'm sure there's tons that we don't know just because that's what, 10 years of a manga, something like that.
Yeah, I want to say it's only like 7 or 8 volumes. So it's not like a ton, but there's still, you know, there's a decent amount there and stuff that came out post movie that I'm sure were influenced by the movie.
Yeah.
This was my first time actually seeing this one too. So
yeah, it's a good movie. I enjoy it. It's got a good story. Animation wise for the time that it's in is really good.
I mean, that's just Studio Ghibli stuff. And again, like just that early Miyazaki stuff, just stellar animation all around.
Mm-hmm. I watched it with English voice acting, so I don't really, it's fine. Like, it's not, I mean, it's got Shia LaBeouf and
Patrick Stewart
and Mark Hamill, so like,
and the girl from Big Fish.
I can't even remember her name. I looked it up, the casting, and I didn't recognize her, so I don't really care.
Allison Lohman. She doesn't act anymore, but I just want to double check. Yeah, she was in Matchstick Men and Big Fish, but I'm pretty sure she was also in that movie Drag Me to Hell, which was like her last acting credit. Yeah, yeah, she was the main character in Drag Me to Hell, which is just not a good movie, but also an incredibly like B horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a weird one. The movie also has Justin Long in it.
Justin Long's good. I like Justin Long.
Yeah,
but
So this was the second English voice cast in the version we watched.
Yeah, so wasn't this one of the ones that like got dubbed like in like the late 80s, early 90s?
Yeah, and then apparently Disney redubbed it in 2005. And
yeah,
that's the version that's on Max now.
Yeah, when Disney purchased Ghibli, they redubbed a lot of the older stuff.
So they didn't purchase Ghibli, right? Didn't they just purchase the U.S. licensing rights or something like that?
Yeah, whatever it was, like the rights to Ghibli, the like rights to distribute or something. I know Disney had some sort of hand of having something with to do with Ghibli. I didn't know what. I just knew just some hand of it in Ghibli some way.
Oh, this was one of those ones where they renamed everybody too.
I mean, names are fine. I don't remember any other name besides Nausicaä. So,
but it's just funny. Like it's one of those like super Americanized things where they actually like Nausicaä. They renamed Princess Xandra.
You mean the original? The original.
Yeah, it's so dumb when they do that stuff.
You gotta localize things. Like that's what localizers do. Like in the gaming industry, like they rename shit so it's localized more for the country they're in. So
they also renamed it Warriors of the Wind.
I did not know that either. Yeah. Like I said, I don't know much about the movie besides having had watched it once before, to where like I started it, and as I had already stated prior to us recording, today with work was hectic as hell, and like my whole intention was like, all right, I can start it during lunch and then just kill an hour watching it after lunch, but I wasn't able to kill an hour, but turning it on, I'm like, oh, I've watched this before, great, I don't have to pay 100% attention because I know what goes on and I remember what goes on, awesome. And so I watched it during lunch and then worked with the last hour on it.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, this was one of those early, like, anime being brought over to, like, in the 70s and 80s, like, animation companies doing that stuff were just, they were bad about it. Like, Speed Racer got butchered, Voltron, Macross, Robotech, I think is what we know it as, but it's actually, like, 7 different series in Japan.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, like I probably have that slightly wrong, but yeah, like all these animation companies that like licensed the Japanese stuff like really butchered it and like gave everybody like super American names and made it more violent sounding in a lot of cases. Like again, Warriors of the Wind versus Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's not all that much warrioring going on in this movie.
Yeah, no.
Like there's some action sequences, but like I wouldn't call anyone in it a warrior per se.
I feel like in the 80s and 90s, people wouldn't have gone and seen it if it was called Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind.
Oh, exactly. I mean, yes. It's just, it sucks that that was just how a lot of that stuff got done back then.
Yeah.
But then like by the time like all of these things started getting re-released by Disney, it's like, okay, well, like we're going to get at least one like name. Which, like, this one you had Patrick Stewart, Shia LaBeouf, Uma Thurman, Edward James Olmos. Like, you know, there's some people in this. Shit, Frank mm-hmm. Welker? Huh. Interesting. The voice of Megatron, Frank Welker.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was Goal, who, I'm right there with you, Rich. I know Nausicaa, and I'm not really sure anyone else's name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's that. I enjoyed the movie, though. I thought it was neat. I thought the world was actually really interesting.
Yeah,
I agree. And, Rich, like you said, it is very much one of those, it's like, take care of the world, because otherwise it's just going to murder us.
Yeah, which, I mean, I agree with. We should do more to protect the environment and protect the world, and I hate people who say, oh, well, I'm going to die soon, so I don't care, and I'm just going to destroy the world anyway. It's like, well, fuck you. Think about other generations. Well, I don't care about other generations. Well, you have kids. I don't care about them. Well, fuck you. You're an ass. Yes, I know someone who's like that. But yeah, it's like, I love the message, and I think the movie in and of itself portrays it very well. But like that, it is also, that's a common theme behind a Miyazaki movie, is the environment or Mother Nature or stuff like, in generally, just the environment or Mother Nature. And then death. Death is another major Miyazaki theme as well.
Yeah, that is true. But yeah, I have always wanted to watch this one, and just for whatever reason never did, but I'm glad I finally did.
Yeah. I didn't know, this was something I learned a couple weeks ago, watching actually on Dropout, the new season. I didn't know that Miyazaki, like Hayao Miyazaki, the writer of Ghibli movies and creator of these Ghibli movies, he's a fucking douche and a tool and an asshole.
Really?
But yeah, he's an asshole. He hates anime. He hates animation. He's like, that you can find quotes of him being like, I want this to fail. I don't believe in this. And like, he sucks. He's like a dick. And then you have, I don't remember his first name, but the other Miyazaki that a lot of people know, who is the creator of the Bloodborne Demon Souls movies, or not movies, games. He's like the nicest guy in the world, and says like the sweetest, nicest things all the time, and he's just happy to be alive. But Hayao Miyazaki, he's like one of those, he's just like, I hate everything kind of things. But then he makes like the sweetest movies. It's the funniest thing.
I mean, like, Are we sure that all of those quotes are taken the way they're meant to be?
No, he is illegitimately, he is a jerk.
So, in his wiki, one sentence here is, he's particularly critical of Japanese animation, saying that anime is, quote, produced by humans who can't stand looking at other humans. That's why the industry is full of otaku.
Okay, so he is judging, like...
He fucking hates nerds.
Yeah. Which, I mean, like, look at a lot of anime out there and how just gross it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for every fun show, and, like, even a lot of the fun shows have gross stuff in it. There are shows that are just like, yeah, this shouldn't actually exist.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, he talks shit on his own work. Apparently he talked shit on his son's work. Like, he doesn't like film and art in general, and maybe anime specifically, too, but, like, I don't know, he's just... There are, I don't think the clip is on YouTube to share with you guys, but a lot of the dark and down shit that was said that you would expect to come from the guy who made Bloodborne, Demon Souls, and shit like that, came from the guy who made Princess Mononoke and Ponyo.
Yeah, I don't know, like just glancing through this Wikipedia article, like, I can understand some of his complaints. I would have to actually, read or hear with legitimate translation, like some of the stuff that he has said.
Yeah,
because you never sometimes some of this stuff is just, it's translated poorly.
Mm-hmm.
He might not be saying it sucks. He might be saying that he is disappointed in it himself, like that it did not come out as good as he wanted it to, or something like that.
It was the episode was a few weeks ago, so I don't quite remember. I just remember it being. Them being going over yeah, he's kind of a jerk.
Yeah, which I mean, everyone's a jerk. It's the world we live in.
No, not everyone.
No, yeah, pretty much everyone.
No, not everyone.
I mean, look, he can't be that bad. He did say that Donald Trump would. He did not think that Donald Trump would be elected president. Calling it a terrible thing, and then also said Hillary Clinton is terrible as well. So he's not all bad.
He's not all bad, but still.
But yeah, I honestly, there's not a whole lot else to say about it. Thoroughly enjoyed the movie. I thought the insect things were actually really cool. Just the way that they basically took regular insects and kind of mutated them a little bit and then made them super big.
Yeah,
and her glider thing was super cool.
Yeah, the technology in the movie was really cool in general. It's just the thought that, this is 1,000 years after the fall of civilization, which, to me, I love a post-apocalyptic story that's not immediately after the apocalypse. I love a story where it's been hundreds, thousands of years since the apocalypse, and people are, civilization is starting to come back, but it's still not where it was. I love that kind of story. And so when they're, running around with guns, but, they're the lame guns, one-shot guns and stuff like that. But also a glider that sometimes needs help being sent into the sky, but other times she can just jump and it's fine. Which, the physics behind that glider make no sense, just based on, how it was being used. But then, there's tanks, and their planes are, 1950s planes. And I was like, this is cool that this is 1,000+ years into the future, or 1,000 years into the future, but... It's 60, 70 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, and it does have that, you know what? You'd probably Turn a Gundam then. Because that's kind of what Turn a Gundam is. It's the world thousands of years after, a nuclear holocaust, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And, society has essentially wrapped back around to, turn of the century. All their planes are, open top propeller planes, the bi wings and all.
Yeah.
And they have cars, but they're those open top, they're more motor coaches than cars, or that they're that step between, I guess, a motor coach and what we know as a car. And then they start finding fucking giant robots buried under the ground and people from an entire civilization on the moon that comes back to claim Earth now that all the radiation is gone.
Yeah.
But I agree though that, I don't particularly care for apocalypse movies and stuff like that. Like, I think, like, mm-hmm. post-apocalyptic stuff is generally pretty fucking boring because it's all the fucking same. But yeah. when you do something like this where it's like, oh, yeah, like, the world fucking went to shit, like, generations ago, then you can do interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Because everyone's going to have a slightly different take on, like, where would humanity get back to in this amount of time with nothing to work from?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was I? Oh, We just caught up on Dr. Stone, and that's kind of like what that is, in a way. Like, in 2020, the entire world got turned to stone. And then
COVID turned people to stone?
Say that again?
COVID turned people to stone?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, in like 2020, everyone was turned into stone. And then 3,000 years later, by just, honestly, random fucking happenstance, one kid got... broken out of the stone, and he's very smart and proceeds to like kind of start rebuilding society. He's like, all right, well, here's all the things we need to make like a rudimentary battery. Mm-hmm. And like, they get all of the things they need to make a rudimentary battery, and he makes a battery. And then like, he makes like food items that they wouldn't have had back then, and like self-propelled cars and stuff like that. Like, they're made out of wood, and they can only go like, you know, 2 miles an hour, but still, like, it's a thing to transport things.
Yeah.
Yeah, that stuff's neat. Anyway, anything else either you want to say about Nausicaa?
No, I probably, anything else I would have to say, I bet you I probably said about it, like, 6 years ago when I first watched it and talked about it on the show, because I do remember I started doing, like, a Ghibli kick that I never stuck with.
I think the only kick that you actually got through was Godzilla.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's 100% true. 100%. Like, I'm not going to deny it.
Yeah, I mean, that was not me, like making fun of you. It's just, Godzilla's the one thing where, like, you start it, and you're like, no, I'm just going to fucking see it through.
Yeah. Yeah.
You also, I feel like you gave yourself, like, a good like, stretch for that. You're like, I'm going to watch one once a week on, like, Sunday.
That was what I was trying to do with, I think Ghibli was just, like, I just want to go through them all, and so I was watching them whenever I had the chance, but I just stopped watching them, or they became less available at one point.
Yeah, because that might have been between, like, before HBO got them all and everything.
Yeah, because I think it was I was watching them on Netflix, or I might have even been getting discs of them from Netflix at one point, and then I was watching them on Netflix, and then they weren't on Netflix anymore, and then they went to HBO, and yeah, so.
Yeah. But Drew, you have a pick for next time.
I do. So this is an adaptation of a Cold War thriller novel that is one of the greatest comedies of all time, apparently.
The Hunt for Red October?
No, Doctor Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. Yeah, turns out that's an adaptation of like a Cold War thriller novel.
Did not know that. That is one of those movies I've always been like, I kind of want to watch that just to see what the fuck it is.
Same. Like I said, it is always on and usually near the top of like greatest comedies of all times lists. And I'm like, I would probably enjoy this, but never take the time to sit down and watch it. So here we go.
I have a feeling this one's not going to land for you.
I already looked it up, and it's 60
there's no
years
colors.
Old. I'm not going to like it. It's old. I don't like old things.
I can't wait till you're old and you hate yourself.
Oh, I don't have to be old to do that.
It's only 19 years older than the movie we just watched.
But the movie we just watched had pretty colors.
It was 40 years old. Was older than all of us.
That is true.
But it had pretty colors.
This one might have pretty colors.
No, it's black and white.
I do believe this is all black and white.
It's all black and white.
Well, you can imagine colors.
I don't have that sort of imagination to live actively imagine colors.
Well, you should get
just
better.
Start coloring in your screen.
Yeah,
it's going.
Yeah, yeah. Just every time a scene change, I'll pause it for every scene, color the screen with dry erase markers or something, and then when the next one comes, and
no, just get that. Those like see through things that are like tinted different colors. Just put a bunch of them on your screen so that depending on where the things are standing, they'll be different colors.
Mm-hmm.
Problem solved.
Yeah.
But okay, so in 2 weeks on the 18th, we will have an episode where we talk about Dr. Strangelove or whatever the rest of the title was.
How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb.
There you go. That. Drew, what is Nimona?
It's a movie that I actually think Richie would really enjoy. It's an animated movie from last year. Direct to Netflix. Was nominated for Best Animated Feature. It's kind of the reverse, where like all the technology was super futuristic, but everyone was in like suits of armor and used swords, but also had a very inclusive vibe to it. I couldn't tell you any of the voice actors in it except Eugene from the Try Guys plays one of the main characters. And him and like the main guy are a gay couple, because Eugene is. So that was neat. But it's about, you know, they are about to, in this big massive city that's like walled in, they're about to knight some new knights, and this one guy is the main character is not a like noble born, so you know he's kind of looked down on by most of the other knights except for his boyfriend, who was also being knighted, like I said, played by Eugene. And as they're going through the knighting ceremony, the queen of the city gets killed by the main character, or so you're led to believe, and then he flees and goes into hiding, but then this girl shows up who turns out to be a shapeshifter who helps him solve actually what really happened. And okay. It was cute. Yeah, the animation was neat.
Yeah, I just looked it up. I remember seeing like this on Netflix, but didn't actually watch it. It does have some people in it though. Like the Nimona is Chloe Grace Moretz,
Okay.
Hit girl.
Yes, right.
Ballister is Riz Ahmed. I don't know how to pronounce that. I'm bad at words. Who's like been in a bunch of stuff, including Rogue One. Like he was in Rogue One.
Okay. Then I have seen something he's been in.
Francis Conroy has been in all sorts of stuff, especially like TV shows. Lots of TV shows. She's the older lady that has that like one like one of her eyes is like blacked out for some reason. I'm not sure why.
Couldn't tell you.
Yeah. RuPaul is a voice.
Oh, how about that?
Everyone knows RuPaul.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was neat. The animation was pretty good. The story was good. Like I said, it did actually kind of keep me guessing on exactly what happened, and had a couple of little twists. I think it maybe went on 10-15 minutes too long, but
which is kind of funny because it's only 99 minutes.
Yeah, it probably could have stood to be like 90 minutes and cut out a little bit of just like goofy fluff.
Okay. I feel like 90 minutes is the right amount of time for like an animated film like this.
Yeah. There were a couple scenes that kind of just stretched out a little too long, and then like you got an answer and then they would like, I feel, turned you in a way that maybe they didn't need to, or could have just changed some things to make it a little bit shorter, but it wasn't too long. Like, we've definitely watched things that have gone on way too long. So, and I won't say that this was like obnoxiously long or anything like that.
That's good. Yeah. I mean, nowadays a lot of movies go on too long. So Everything has to be 4 hours for one reason or another.
They need to put in plot twists that don't really change anything. They just sidetrack you for no reason.
Drew, this could have been your pick for this week.
Is this an adaptation?
This is an adaptation of a graphic novel with the same name, Nimona.
Well, I mean, I didn't choose to watch this on my own, so
that's fair.
And then you didn't watch it on your own.
Well, I was the only one in the room when I was watching it, but I was texting with one of my partners. She was like, I want to watch a movie. I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't want to pick anything. She was like, how about this? I'm like, sure, whatever.
Nice.
So we were texting back and forth during it. Like I said, it's cute. It's good.
It lost to The Boy and the Heron, which is a Studio Ghibli movie. So, yeah, you know, brought it back around.
It's all connected, unintentionally.
Yeah, but this actually sounds like it was probably actually not too bad.
Yeah, like, you know, it had some goofy, funny moments. It had, like, the couple of, that joke was in there for the adults that are having to watch it with their kid moments. And then, you know, interesting art.
There's always at least one of those.
Yeah, exactly. Cool art style, cute story. We've watched better movies on this show, but, you know, I'd say this would be worth watching.
Nice. Very good.
It's no Paddington, but it's very good.
I mean, not many things are Paddington.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Drew, do you know what Bellatro is?
Very vaguely. It's on my radar of things I want to play, but they've also announced that they're working on a mobile version, so I'm probably waiting for that.
I mean, that's fair. And Rich, you have no idea what it is?
No, I actually had somebody come to my stream as I was doing Queen's Blood and Final Fantasy and being like, oh, you're playing more Bellatro. And I'm like, no, I don't. What? And then that's all I know of this.
All here, I'll give all I know real quick, and then you can go further. It's run-based poker. That's all I know.
Yeah, it's everything I hate in games. It's a card game. It's a
poker roguelike.
Yeah, it's a deck-building game, and it's a roguelike. Nothing about it should work for me. I love it.
I hear it's good.
Yeah, so it is. It's run-based poker. I'm bad at poker, like at knowing what pokers they are. I guess it's like a seven-card draw sort of thing.
Okay.
I want to say you have a seven-card hand, and you have to make the best hand you can with up to five cards.
Okay, that's poker.
Yep. So, and the game tells you like what, like you, I think it's like you hit like, so I'm playing on Steam Deck. You hit like the select button or whatever that button's actually called nowadays. And it gives you like, here are the types of hands that are worth points and how many like base points those hands are worth.
Okay.
So it's like pair, two pair, three of a kind, full house, like all the standard stuff. I don't think it actually has a royal flush as an option. So I'm assuming you just get the same amount of points if you have a royal flush. I haven't gotten one yet to know.
I mean, straight flush, I'm assuming, is the highest that it has listed then.
You know what? I'd have to actually double check on that. I don't know if they actually have a straight flush or if it's just flush and straight.
Because a royal flush is just the highest straight flush, so it might not necessarily break out royal flush into something different.
I guess that makes sense. But so the whole idea is there are three rounds per ante is what they call them, which is basically per level. At least to start, there are eight levels to go through. And the way the levels are broken out, it's the small blind, the big blind, and then the boss blind. And at each level, the score you have to meet to beat the blind goes up. So the first one is always like 300, 600, 900, or something along those lines.
Okay.
Because in your first three rounds, you're unlikely to really have anything to get bigger scores. I want to say I've gotten up to round six so far, and the big blind for that, I think it was like 42,000. So like the scores escalate. The way the scoring works is your base hand that you play is worth something. So, like, a pair is, say, worth 10 points, but then each card in that pair is worth, essentially, like, its face value. So, a 10 is a 10, a 9 is a 9, a 2 is a 2, ace is 11, and the other face cards are all 10. So, those will add up. So, getting, like, a straight with all face cards, you're going to have the most possible points of just card value, since it's, you know, it's all 10 point cards.
Right.
And then a straight is generally worth a little bit more, some more base points. And then on top of that, there is a multiplier that goes into it. So at the beginning, it's usually like two or four, depending on some of like the cards themselves. But as you're playing, you're winning money after each blind, and then you get to shop. And when you shop, there's a couple different things you can buy. There are Joker cards. That the Joker cards, you can have up to five of them in play, and they're the ones that a lot of times are giving you the additional multipliers. And there's usually some sort of stipulation to how they work. There's one that just cycles through random intervals. So it could be a zero multiplier. I've also had it be like a 20 multiplier, like a 20 times multiplier. And it's just when that card gets activated, whatever it happens to be cycling through is what gets applied to that hand. And then you have ones that they increase every hand you play that you don't play whatever your most played hand is. So in a lot of cases, like a pair or two pair are going to be the hands you play the most often because they're the easiest hands to just throw down when you're trying to like get a better set going on.
Right.
And so like if you can go a few rounds with not playing a pair, you then have this card that's doing like two or three times multipliers every single hand, which is nice. And there's a few others that'll like just give you rather than doing multipliers, like doubling or tripling it or whatever, they just add like a flat number, like here's 10 to the multiplier. And those a lot of times are based on what sort of cards you're throwing out. So, you know, if you throw out a flush, you will always get a 10 multiplier if you have that joker in play or something like that. So those jokers are really how you end up getting those scores to kind of start skyrocketing. Especially if you can finagle your hand well. Like, I had one that, I forget exactly how many it did, but it did a pretty big multiplier if you had no discards left. Which I didn't talk about that part yet, but when you're looking at your hand, you can select up to 5 cards to discard, and you have a set number of discards. It's usually 3 to start, and then there are different things that can let you get more or less action even. And this particular card, if you use all your discards, every hand you play after that got some like stupid bonus to the multiplier. So I had a couple rounds where I was literally just like first hand just using all of my my discards to just try and set up the best hand I could, and immediately, excuse me, getting just some crazy score and clearing it. And generally, like when the first time you play, the first time you go into it with your base deck, you have 3 hands that you can play per round and 3 discards you can make per round. Right now I'm up to, I think I have 4 or 5 hands that I can play with the current deck that I'm using, but I kept it at 3 discards. And as you play and unlock more cards, it actually gives you different decks to play with, and the decks have some sort of like ability to them. It'll either give you an extra hand you can play, give you extra discard, give you extra money after every round, so then you can buy more cards. And then to go back to the purchasing stuff, aside from the jokers, there are also tarot cards you can purchase.
Which okay.
They are the major arcana of the tarot cards, and they do like one time like effects to you. So one that I buy a lot is turn three selected cards into the same suit, and it'll be like a specific suit, like all diamonds or clubs or something like that, which is great if like you're trying to get a flush but you can't get like those last 2 you need. It's like, cool, I'm just gonna turn all the cards into fucking clubs and then I have a flush.
Right.
There's also some that you can use on like 1 or 2 cards that will turn them into like a bonus card, which gives them additional point value. Sometimes it gives them multipliers added to them that, you know, it's a one and done sort of card, and they're usually fairly cheap. Mm-hmm. And then you can also buy booster packs, and some of the booster packs apply immediately. Other ones actually give you cards to add to your deck. So like, it's just a regular deck of cards. It's 52 cards. But as you're playing, like, I think the highest I've gotten up to is like 63 cards in the deck.
Okay.
So like at one point I had like 7 aces. And it's just, you'll open one of these boosters and it'll give you 3 to 5 cards to pick from. If it's 5 cards, you usually get 2. If it's 3 cards, you usually get 1. And there are just basic cards, like just like, here's a 3 of clubs, and it's just a 3 of clubs. But then there are cards that are either worth like extra points, or that are worth that give multipliers that do both. Like, there are slabs of stone sometimes that you can add to your deck that have no value to them as a card. Like, they're not going to make or break your hand, but they just add extra points to it. So like, if you have like 3 of a kind and you have one of these stone cards, you can just throw that stone card out with it and get an extra like 100 points added to your total. Which then, when it goes to get the multipliers hit after all of that, you now suddenly have 100 extra points that are going to multiply by whatever your multiplier is.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. It took me like a few rounds to really like understand it, but like once I understood it, I'm like, oh, this is great. Like, it's super easy. Like, sometimes you like it's cards. So sometimes you do just have like a bad draw, and you run out of discards, and you're just kind of fucked. Like, I lost on a round 4 yesterday to the small blind. I lost by 1 pair. If I would have had 1 pair in my last hand, I would have had enough points to beat it. So like less than 100 points, basically. But I didn't. The most I could do was throw out a single ace as just like the high card. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like lost by like 5 points. And that one sucked because then roguelike, it goes back to the beginning. You lose all the stuff you purchased. And the best you're going to get is you'll have unlocked new possible like deck options and new cards that will show up in the store.
Okay.
Yeah. So the more cards that you purchase, that the more new cards you purchase, unlock more things for you. Because you'll occasionally have cards come up that say like new card, like you haven't purchased this one yet, like discover it basically. And when you purchase that one, it gets added kind of to the overall like accumulation of things. And when you lose a run, it's like, hey, you've unlocked this new deck because you've purchased X amount of different cards at this point.
Okay.
So it doesn't carry things over, but it does give you at least, it gives you something that makes getting back to those higher numbers a little bit easier usually.
Mm-hmm.
But it is all super random too. And I mean, like a hand of poker doesn't take that long to play. Like you can get through the all three rounds in like 5 minutes, unless like you're really like sitting there staring like, what is the optimal way to make these points?
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of cases, I'm just looking like, what are the most cards I can put down at one time? Because that is generally going to be the way to get the most points.
Yeah.
And I guess the last thing to say about it is the boss blind is it's usually the highest points you have to get to, but it also has some sort of effect when you go into it. One of the more common effects is it debuffs cards, which basically makes them not worth any points. So they still count towards your hand. So if you have two aces and say for whatever reason, the debuff is all spades. So you have like a diamond and a spade ace, and that's all you have is that pair. You still throw both of them. It still counts as a pair. You still get the full score for a pair, but you only get 11 points for that diamond. The spade doesn't count towards anything. And like that can really fuck you if like you're just getting really bad draws and your entire hand just keeps being that card that was debuffed. Other ones I've seen are any cards that have been played in previous rounds. So like if you just had a round that just took all like four or five of your hands to win it, like you might not have that many cards left that are like actually worth anything. And I had one that you had one hand, like that's all. You had one chance to score enough points to win.
Damn.
Yeah. And it was like, you have your three or four discards you had to like try and make that hand. You had whatever bonuses and buffs you could do between jokers and tarot cards, and you just had to hope that you had a good hand that you could kind of amp up with other stuff and boost it. But yeah, it's, I think I want to say I'm at like 5 hours in it, which is unusual for me for like a game like that.
Yeah,
like I don't know what it is. Like I don't like any of the individual pieces to this game, but I'm having a great time with this game.
I mean, that's cool.
I'm gonna be honest. I have not been able to keep track of anything you were saying.
Good.
My interest in the game dropped when you said poker.
Yeah, I didn't think you'd enjoy this game at all. No. It's like when you talk about Monster Hunter.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe, but it's just like there's so many. You talked about so many different mechanics. I couldn't follow any of it. I couldn't follow any of the mechanics that you were talking about.
Yeah, and you know, like it actually sounds way like harder than it is when you're playing. Because once you get in there and you're playing, like your first few hands, you're not really able to do anything. So you're really just making hands. And the game has like a quick tutorial that like makes you do the things once so you can see how they work. And then like as you're playing, it's like, oh, okay, so like this joker is going to do a multiplier. I need multipliers. Like that is how I'm going to get the higher scores.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like just explaining them to somebody without anything in front of them, I could see how it would be very like, well, this doesn't, you just said a bunch of words. Like none of those words go together.
Right. I mean, I feel like that's slightly the case with almost anything.
Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong, but I think there's, like Richie said, he doesn't like poker. So for him, like a lot of like the poker side of it, it was like an immediate checkout. And then like, if we were talking about just like a regular game, like Hades, for instance, like another roguelike, like you can kind of explain that stuff and we would both get it for the most part. But explaining like cards and discards and all that stuff can it gets confusing. I get it.
It'd be like us describing Queen's Blood to you, Drew. Like
Queen's Blood. Again, like when you get to the point where almost anything, like, it's so much harder to explain things without the things in front of people, even if it's something very simple.
Yeah.
Like, even just poker, which is a pretty simple game, to really break it down without having, like, actual cards in front of you, it's like, yeah, I can try to explain this, but it's going to be harder than you seeing it.
Yeah. Yeah, so, definitely.
So you put, what, you said, like, 8 hours into this game, Cop? Something like that?
Like right around five, like five under hours? 5 hours.
So has the like strange meta macabre storyline made itself present to you at all?
I haven't gotten to that yet. So I'm assuming you have to get through the first eight antes, and I'm up to six or seven.
I don't know if there's actually a strange meta macabre storyline in this. I'm just making fun of Final Fantasy more so than anything else.
Oh, so I wouldn't be surprised if there was.
They took that from Inscription and made a meta. I feel like they stole the idea of Queen's Blood, or at least the storyline for Queen's Blood, from Inscription, which is just this strange, weird, meta, macabre storyline that goes on when you play the game about the game that you're playing in the game. It's so weird.
I didn't know there was a storyline to it. I also, yeah. I haven't had time to actually play Final Fantasy in like 3 weeks now, 2 weeks. Like, I'm still at the Gungaga reactor.
I finished the Queen's Blood everything. That last match sucked. I had to look up a strategy for it.
I mean, if it's not required, I don't do it, so.
I'm at that point, almost. But I have also completed pretty much everything already. But I'm anybody who asks me if they're going to play, if they should play the game, I'm going to turn around and say, don't do everything. Don't do everything. Just play the game.
I mean, that is my recommendation for all games.
That's not my recommendation for all games. But we talked about this a little last week, and I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to, like, push it down a little bit further this week. I looked it up. 42 and a half hours to mainline the story. 83 hours for main and extras. And then was it, like, 110, 120 hours for completionist. So main and extras means playing everything in one playthrough. That's the way I understand it. So when you're going to sit here and tell me that it takes twice as long to play and beat the game if you do all of the bonus content, that means 50% of your game is worthless. So then, to me, you can't grade that game higher than a 5. Because that game does not matter.
So then, what's the highest you can rate Monster Hunter World? A 2?
No.
But it's 4 times longer to complete it than mains and sides, according to how long to beat. So, a 2.5 out of 10? Is the most you can give it?
I mean, those are very different games, though.
Yeah, but I mean, just going by that logic of if a game has so much extra stuff, that then that automatically makes the game worse. But
the idea is the main story. You don't play Monster Hunter World for the story. Like Cobb said,
there's not a story, right?
Like there's a story, but it does not matter. You don't play Monster Hunter World for the story. You play Monster Hunter World for the combat system, for playing the game, for unlocking the armor bits and things like that. These, quote, sides in Monster Hunter World are fighting the other monsters and fighting more monsters and doing the raids. Like, it's the actual gameplay loop are the sides in Monster Hunter World. Whereas the sides in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth are shit that does not matter to the game in and of itself. Does not affect your game, with the exception of maybe giving you a little bit extra experience. Whereas the sides in Monster Hunter World add to the gameplay experience by giving you more armor, more equipment, more monsters to fight, and that.
Yeah, which is true, but you saying that the game can't be rated higher than a 5, like, you don't rate a game based on time versus story. Base a game on, like, what is good about it, what is bad about it.
And what is bad about it is half the game sucks, because half the game has nothing to do with anything and takes up too much time. What I'm saying is, especially with RPGs specifically, if your game, if to beat your storyline, because that's what you play an RPG for, is the story. To beat the story of your RPG takes you 40 hours, and it takes you twice as long, or it takes you just as long to do everything else in the game as it took you to do the story, you put too much in your game. And half of your game has nothing to do with the other half of your game.
But then people complain that the game's not long enough. It's a lose-lose situation.
I'm sorry. I don't think games should be more than 60 hours unless it's something where it's repeatable, like a Monster Hunter or a Sea of Thieves or an Apex or something like that. Something repeatable.
Well, I mean, Apex is no time.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's something that is the gameplay loop. The gameplay loop in Final Fantasy VII isn't fucking side quests and mini games.
Well, you're not meant to replay Final Fantasy over and over and over again. You play it once and you're done.
But the completion, they have a new game plus.
Okay, that's so a new like the new game plus doesn't mean definitely you have to replay it. Like it's not a new story.
There's definitely playable content locked behind new game plus. There's
playable content and more story are different things.
But it's still that again, you're adding fluff to your game.
Okay. New Game Plus is fluff.
Yes. Like, but again,
that's why New Game Plus doesn't exist in everything.
But you play Final Fantasy VII to get the story.
Uh-huh.
I played for 14 hours. Saturday was 10 and a half hours. Monday was 6.5 hours. 14 hours from the time I started on Saturday to the time I did story content on Monday, and I got an hour of story.
And look, we talked about this last week, too. Like, the pacing is not good, but you're doing some of this to yourself also by doing everything. I've heard tons of people on podcasts rave about the side stuff because they're enjoying it so much. Like,
some of the side stuff is fun. Some of it is fun, but a lot of it is bad. A lot of it is annoying.
I skip everything I don't want to do. Like, I'll give it a shot. If I don't like it, I just don't do it. I don't waste more than 5 minutes on it.
I just unlocked the final side quest of the game. And it is the main party head. I don't remember. But it's a Shinra employee that you meet in Costa del Sol goes to the Gold Saucer and becomes the best of the best in all the mini games at the Gold Saucer. So then you have to beat his score.
I won't do those at all.
In all of the games, one of them is the Battle Arena. I don't understand how this head of Shinra, just paper pusher, can win in these combat arenas that I'm having difficulty on.
Get good.
This guy isn't good. This guy's a paper pusher that apparently he from is. His family. Like then it's the 3D battler thing. It's one of the things. Which that game sucks. It flat out sucks.
Yeah. I mean, look, nothing in the Gold Saucer was fun.
I disagree. I liked the Speed Square. I liked the Chocobo Racing.
I only did the one Chocobo race, and like it was fine, but like
I think the Chocobo Racing is fantastic. I had such a huge amount of fun doing the Chocobo Race.
I have no intention, unless I have to do that again, like, I'm not doing anything in the Gold Saucer again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the difference between us, is like, I haven't had time to play it because I just had a lot of stuff going on. I was still having a great time with it, though, because I skip all the side shit I don't want to do. Like, yeah, it's there, I can go back to it if I want to, but like, if I'm just not in the mood to do it, I just don't do it.
Like, mm-hmm. Look, I like the game outside of the bonus content, and it took me to 90 hours to get to the point of like, all right, I'm kind of over this shit. Like, it took me playing for 12, 14 hours to be like, oh, I'm just over this. No, what really got me was at one point you return back to Costa del Sol, and then they unlock a new side quest, at least one new side quest in every region.
You mentioned that last week too. That's all stupid.
And then here's the worst. Here's like the thing I think is the biggest, most egregious thing to this game to get to what they could do. The battle arena, when you go to the Gold Saucer, at the point that I'm at, it unlocks a bunch of new matches. 12 of them you can't do till you beat the game. All of them, their rewards are, here's a potion, here's an ether, here's an AP book. Nothing else. You have to beat the game to get a fucking potion.
Yeah, I mean, At that point, those are just there as like stuff to do post credits.
Yeah.
Like it's giving you, it's, they're trying to give people a reason to go back and do things after the game is done. And it's just that stuff doesn't appeal to you.
Final Fantasy VII Remake was so fucking good.
I mean, this one has been too. You just burned yourself out doing everything.
Yeah.
I did everything in Remake.
Yeah,
I played that game twice.
It was a much smaller scope.
Well, and that's my problem, though. I'm at 80 hours on top of the 35 that I put into Remake, and I'm not even on disc 2 yet. Aerith is still fucking alive.
Well, spoilers.
Yeah, seriously.
Like, that's my problem with this. That's where I'm like, I'm so happy to have a remake of this game, but you're going just way too overboard with some of this shit.
There's not that much actual shit that happens post Aerith dying. Like, disc 2 is pretty fucking short.
Then why do we need a third game?
Sephiroth.
Capitalism. That's why.
I mean, yes.
Yeah, but like, look, three discs, three games.
But then each disc should be each game.
The disc 2 essentially doesn't fucking exist. I don't even remember what the fuck happens. Well, actually,
disc 3 doesn't exist. Yeah,
like, disc 3 is just, oh, the world's open, the weapons are here, okay, go to the end.
Literally, disc 3 is going to Crater.
Yeah.
That's all disc 3 is.
Finishing up anything that you hadn't done yet.
Yeah, disc 2 was from the fall, I believe you... From the ancient city, all the way into Crater and Crater falling, and rescuing Cloud, and getting the super high wind, like going all the way up to the super high wind. Once you get the super high wind, once he pushes the big red button on the high wind, that's chapter 3, or that's disc 3, which is just into Crater.
Going into Crater is the only thing you actually have to do.
Yeah, that's that's where it's like, okay, go do all the side stuff that you can go do, which do the chocobo racing, do the underwater shit, do the this, do the that. Like, that's, yeah.
Yeah, right. But it's, you have had a year of playing too many RPGs.
Yep.
And on top of that, like, burn yourself out on a game trying to do everything. Like, I get it.
I mean, that's just how I play every game. Well, most games. The only game I haven't done this with was Lego City Undercover, but that's just because I didn't really care to do everything in that game. And
yeah, but think about this, though. For the last, like, year and a half, you have been complaining about RPGs because you just keep playing them because people are just like, hey, I'm voting for you to play this game, and you're just like, fuck.
Well, I mean, look, yes and no. Like, when it comes to RPGs, there was only two RPG requests. And then somebody bought me an RPG that took me 4 months to beat.
But that's what I mean. Like, you had a bunch of long stretches of, like, you had Tales of Arise, and then you had Star Ocean, and then you had Baldur's Gate. I think you still have another Star Ocean coming up, right?
And then you played Shenmue.
Yeah, it was Tales of Arise. And then I did Remnant 2. Tales of Arise, Star Ocean, Divine Force. Then it was, I played Remnant and Remnant 2 kind of back-to-back to each other. And then Final Fantasy 16, which I didn't hate.
Oh, right.
I had a good time playing Final Fantasy 16. I enjoyed all...
In the world.
That's another game that, like, I did all of the content. It got monotonous and repetitive at the end. That's just because, honestly, the battle system kind of sucked because it was all the same shit. Once you got a rhythm, it was all the same. Outside of just the combat system, like, I enjoyed the whole game, the whole scope of the game, the story and everything, to the point where I might get the DLC. Like, they just announced DLC. I might get that. After 16, there was, like, some time, and it was, I had from August until December, I played just kind of random shit.
I thought you started Baldur's Gate in, like, October.
No, I played Baldur's Gate once in October.
Okay.
I didn't start Baldur's Gate until November. I did, like, some Starfield. I just dipped my toe. I did, like, two sessions of Starfield. I played, I don't even know. I'd have to go through, like, my YouTube VODs to figure out what I actually played. But yeah, it's like there, after Final Fantasy 16, there was a decent amount of time between 16 and Baldur's Gate that I wasn't playing RPGs.
But still, like, you played a lot of RPGs back to back. Like, yeah. I really like gap or no gap. Like, you don't normally play that many games that are that long, so much. And like with Final Fantasy, you were playing like 3 times a week right now. And on Sundays, when you're playing for like 6-7 hours at a time.
But see, that's what I, that's to me, prior to streaming, I used to put that much amount of time into gaming.
Yeah, but now it's also
different. Work.
Like, I'm not saying you're wrong, but I'm also like, it's a 50-50, because like, I did the same thing with Kingdom Hearts. I played nothing but Kingdom Hearts 1, 2, all of the versions of 2 up until Dream Drop Distance.
And you complained about all of them.
No, I didn't complain about all of them. I had a good time playing them all. It's just, at one point, I got bored.
And that was pre-streaming too, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. Like, you have hit a point now where, like, because of your streaming, like, you're not going to stop Final Fantasy until you're done. Just like you didn't stop Baldur's Gate until you were done. Like, you don't want to, like, have that thing where it's like, well, I'm not going to play this for a little while because I need a break. You're just going to power through it, even though you're losing interest in the game. Whereas, like, and I get it, like you said before, like, you're not good at stopping and then coming back to things. But I personally think that if you weren't playing the game 3 times a week on stream, like, you would have just taken your time with a little bit more, like, played some other stuff in between and just not gotten as burned out.
I don't know, maybe. I can't,
dude, like, playing on stream is not the same as, like, laying on your couch playing all day on a Sunday. Like, I realize you're playing games, and I don't stream, but, like, that's work. Like, it might be fun work, you might be having a good time doing it, but you're multitasking, you're doing, like, 5 different things at once, you're sitting at your computer that you sit at for work all week also. Like, it's a different feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you might not think about it, but subconsciously you know that what you're doing is work, and you're not just playing a fucking video game.
Mm-hmm. Well, after 16 was Remnant 2, or no, I played Remnant 2 was before 16, but then I jumped back into Remnant 2 every once in a while. And then after 16 was Ender Lilies and Death's Door. And just like it was, I think what it leads to more so than anything else. And you're right, maybe it is the playing it multiple times a week for multiple hours. But it's I'm usually playing a different game every day when it comes to streaming. I'm usually like after I beat 16, I did Palia one stream, I did Death's Door another stream, I did Sea of Thieves another stream. It was a different game every day. But I stopped doing a different game every day because then, like, some of the big RPGs I'm playing take too long to play, and I get bored with them, which is why I'm like, all right, well, let me focus. But I don't know. I'm not gonna budge on the fact that I think there's too much content in Final Fantasy 16. And
I mean, 16 was garbage, right?
Not 16 in Final Fantasy 7.
Really. No, it's on tape now.
No, there's too much content in Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth, and if Final Fantasy Re-Minigames 3 comes out and there's just as much bullshit, I'm just gonna be so pissed. Like,
just don't do it.
You don't have to do grind on the bullshit.
The best part is you don't have to grind in this game. Like, the game does a pretty good job of just keeping you at the level you need to be.
But I feel like I miss content if I don't do like side quests that are going to come up. I'm going to do that. It's not like the side quests aren't the big deal. It's the mini games.
Then don't do them. Yeah,
we'll play them.
You have to.
Drew, you don't fucking play this game. You have to do the mini games. The mini games come in with the story.
But generally, like, once. Like, you're talking about all the Queen's Blood stuff. I haven't played Queen's Blood since the boat.
See, that's the thing, though. Queen's Blood was fun. The only Queen's Blood I did not like was the final match of Queen's Blood.
Okay.
Queen's Blood was fun. I liked that. It's you get a side quest to go pick mushrooms, and outside of the mushrooms, there are enemies to fight. You fight the enemies, and then there's a mini game on how to pick mushrooms. You don't just pick them up.
Right, you were talking about that last week. Yeah, like, I'm just not going to do that. Like, the side quests don't give you good rewards. You don't get experience, really. Like, there's no reason to do them.
You get weapons and shit, man.
Yeah, but how often do you change your weapons?
I change my weapons to master every skill.
Oh, yeah, I don't.
And I change my characters out, like, every couple of fights.
I don't.
I swap out. Like, I the only character I don't care to use is Barret. Fuck Barret. He sucks.
Yeah, well, I use Barret all the time because range.
I use Yuffie all the time because of range.
I don't like Yuffie as much. Like, I like Yuffie, but I like Barret for range and better.
Yuffie is the best character to use.
To you?
No, literally to everybody. Everyone I've talked to, she is the best character to use in this game.
Like, I like Yuffie.
I'm not even going to get her when I play it.
You are. You can't not get her.
Fuck this remake, then. You should be able to play the whole game without getting her.
I don't know. Like, are you sure you have to get her?
She comes. She joins your team. Like,
yeah, but there's that, like, conversation where you can kind of be like, nah, I'm good.
No, like, she's a main focus on story beats. Like,
I guess that's true. There are a couple things where she is a little too.
There's literally a story beat when you get to Nibelheim that focuses in on her.
Well, there's also the one in Mount Coral, like after you leave Costa del Sol. Like,
you get her. You can't not get her. I mean, the bullshit is Cid and Vincent aren't playable characters, and you get them.
Spoilers.
It's been known that they're not playable characters.
I actually did not know that.
But I didn't know Cid wasn't.
Yeah.
I heard Vincent.
And you get them like four chapters before the end of the game, and they're not playable characters.
I mean, it's like Red 13 in the first one.
But you got Red an hour before the end of the game, which makes sense to me that he's not playable. This character, like, these two characters, you get well before the end of the game. Like, I've had them with me for 16 hours.
But that's because you did 15 hours worth of side quests, right?
They shouldn't have unlocked 15 hours worth of side quests when I got them.
It doesn't count if it's not story.
It does count. It's content. It's content that's not good.
But yeah, I like Yuffie. Yuffie's fun to use. Her abilities are neat. But, like, I'd rather have Barret for range because his range is further.
Yuffie's range is across the entire arena.
I don't know. Whenever I'm fighting with her, she always, like, moves into the enemies. Like, I have to purposely move away from them again.
Are you throwing her chakra?
Yeah, like, I throw her spinning star, and then I use her, one of her ninjutsus to, like, change the
And then are you hitting square to use the elemental attack?
Yeah.
She should not be moving closer, unless you're hitting triangle, which then she dashes to her chakra that she's already thrown.
No, I don't hit triangle, because I don't have the, her weapon anymore.
Or maybe her chakra has come back to her, because her chakra's not out the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's entirely possible,
Her chakras are out for me for the entire fight, because that's how I have set her up for.
Yeah, I don't dislike her. I would just rather use Barret. Like, it's opinion.
I think Barret sucks. He's slow. He's clunky. He's just boring to fight with. You just hold square.
He's very good at getting the stagger bar up.
Sure. I get the stagger bar. I get the stagger bar up faster with Cloud than I do with.
I don't use Cloud at all. Like, I mean, he's there, but I only switch to him to use an ability, and then I switch away from him. I can't fucking stand fighting with him. I mostly swap between Barret and Tifa. If I could take Cloud out of the party, I would, and then I would put Yuffie in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I use Barret to get the stagger up, and then I switch to Tifa to just fucking destroy them.
Yeah.
Because Barret has two abilities. One of them is, like, just his regular overcharge shot, and then he has, like, two other like abilities that just knock the stagger bar up a bunch. And then if I have Tifa, I have Tifa set to automatically do Unbridled Strength on herself. So by the time I switch to her, she's got all three levels of that charged, and I just knock them out real quick, and then I can usually have enough ATB to then refill them twice and hit them two more times.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they're a very good combo.
See, I don't know. I pressure pretty much every enemy, and then it's a quick pressure, and then a focus thrust. And 99% of the time, with the first focus thrust, they're already staggered.
I don't think I have. I don't know if I have.
You have focus thrust. You have.
Was that weapon ability that you had to master, or was it just a starting ability?
I'm 99% sure it was a starting ability.
But I know I had it for a while, but I never used Cloud's weapon ability, so I never master them.
He starts with braver. He starts with braver, triple slash, and focus thrust.
Okay,
I do his first weapon. You have it.
I have Braver and Triple Slash for sure. Like those are his only two abilities I really ever use, and then like the magic ones. But I have not mastered a single one of Cloud's weapon abilities.
Yeah, that's you're missing out with some of the, missing out on not mastering some of these abilities, man.
I don't use Cloud. Like I don't find him fun.
Cloud's the only real ability I use of Cloud's is Firebolt Slash. But I'm talking Yuffie. She's got. One of her, she's got Doppelganger, which is amazing because she does twice the amount of damage.
So I just haven't unlocked that yet.
And then she gets Windstorm, I think is what it's called, which pulls enemies into her. And so if you pull enemies into her, throw her chakra, and then attack, there's a little circling chakra around her body as well. So she's dealing damage with her chakra that's on the enemy, the chakra that's circling her body, the Doppelganger that you're attacking with, and the magic that you're attacking with at the same time. You're doing like six times. She is OP.
So I don't have either of those abilities.
Yeah, you're missing out. But let's move on. Because...
I'm also 42 hours behind you.
No, you're only like 10 hours behind me. I'm not even kidding.
Like, I think I've only leveled up Yuffie like three or four times so far since getting her. I don't think I've gotten that many. And like the party basically levels up together. So it's not like it's just her that isn't leveling up. Mm-hmm. But like I focus a lot of the stuff on like the team attacks and like HP and things like that.
I literally forget the team attacks are even in this game.
Oh, I use them all the time.
I forget about them. I didn't know that how they worked until I fought an enemy that required team attacks to stagger.
Yeah.
I didn't understand how you fill up the bar for team attacks. I read every tutorial. I swear I did, but I don't remember them saying, oh, every time you use an ATB, a thing, it charges your team attack thing. And that's how you call your team attacks. Well, I didn't know that.
I'm not talking about the synergy ones. I'm talking about the other one.
What the holding R1 and using those things.
Yeah.
Yeah, those I don't use them at all either.
I use them all the time because that anytime you have an enemy that that is like in the air or whatever, it's the best way to get Tifa up to people because Cloud and Barret and I think everyone else like flings her into the air.
Mm-hmm.
It was also good for what's his name when you fight Palmer, being able to attack him directly when he like jumps out of the robot suit. Mm-hmm. At that one point, you can fling Tifa up to actually be able to hit him head on instead of having to like use range attacks and magic and stuff like that to like focus on him.
No,
those are great because you basically just air juggle Tifa that way, and then you can still use her abilities, and as long as you do it quick enough and then start attacking again, she stays in the air.
Yeah, I mean, but like I said, you don't use Cloud. I use nothing but Cloud's ranged attacks when I'm using Cloud.
Yeah, Cloud's not fun for me. Like, Cloud is super generic to play with.
I mean, he's a sword guy. Yeah. All sword guys are generic to play with.
That's what I mean. Like, he is just incredibly generic. I would prefer to swap him out for any other character, even Kate Sith. But you sidetracked that long enough. Why don't you tell us about this Poppy playtime?
We're going to go with A Way Out first. A Way Out. I beat A Way Out. Last night, me and Timmy beat A Way Out, and that is a very good game. Very, very strong on narrative. It's not... It really doesn't have a lot of, like... I thought it was going to be a lot of puzzle solving and stuff. No, it was it's mostly just narrative. And the narrative is great. It is two guys, they escape from jail, they both have a vendetta against the same person, and so you go after... You try to find that same person. Spoilers for anyone who cares about the story of 2017's A Way Out. I'm gonna spoil it now. Me and Timmy called it when we were done our first session, which is the main character Vincent works for the feds, and he's not actually a criminal. And so we talked about it after we finished it, which we were about a little bit more than halfway through the game. The first time we played it, we talked about it a little bit after, and I was like, my theory is that Vincent isn't actually a criminal. He's in there undercover, And Leo was his connection to get to this guy, to get to the thing that they're trying to get to. And we were right. We were 100% right. Which I was like, that's awesome. I'm glad I guessed it. The game kind of slowly makes it a little bit obvious without straight up telling you until the very end that, like, oh, there's... It kind of nods, like, Vincent's supposed to be an accountant who was cooking the books for this guy. I can't remember his name. I think it was, like, Henry or something like that. He was cooking the books, and he was faking the numbers for him. And he wanted out, and when he was trying to get out, Henry killed his brother framed him for the murder. But as you're playing the game, like, you find out, oh, Vincent's, like, a really good shot, and he knows how to break into cars, and he knows how to do this, and he knows how to do things. He's got contacts on how to get a plane, how to get two fugitives, him and Leo, from somewhere in the United States to fucking Mexico via plane. He has contacts for this. It's, you start to question, like, how does he know this? How does he know how to do this? How is he able to do all this? And, like, it then comes around at the end, like, yeah, he's a fed. Which I was like, that's awesome. I'm glad I guessed it. It was a fun playthrough. The last, like, 2 hours of the game just basically turns into, like, a third-person shooter. But it's all, again, it's all split-screen, and it's really cool. During the shooter parts, they changed the split screen from side to side to vertical, so it's top and bottom to give you that wider screen. To give you that wider,
fun thing to do.
Yeah, to give you that wider aspect so that you'd be able to see better. I was like, that's really neat that they did that.
Yeah.
As you play through the game, it merges the screens during major cutscenes and splits them back out. The one thing, there's two things I wasn't quite psyched about when beating it. Thing number one was at the end of the game, it becomes a one-on-one between the two characters. Because Leo, the actual criminal, gets mad at Vincent for being a cop when he's about to be arrested. And he steals Vincent's gun and steals a cop car and drives off. And then you, as Vincent, have to chase after him. And you have to, like, shoot his boat out. And you have to catch him. And so it eventually becomes a shootout between the two characters. And after one of the characters gets to a certain amount of HP, you then get into, like, a little bit of a fisticuffs fist fight, and you're punching each other in the face. And it's going through, like, memories of each other. And the determining factor of the winner is who can hit their buttons faster and crawl to the gun and shoot the other guy. Because both of your guns get knocked out of your hands, and you both have to crawl, and so you have to hit your keys faster and kill the other guy. There was my issue isn't that. My issue is there was no option to let them live. So I ended up winning the contest, and I had no option to not shoot Leo and let Leo escape. My only option was to kill Leo. And we assume Leo's only option is to kill Vincent. There's no way around it. Which I'm just like, that's kind of bullshit. I wish they could have put it in to where you can either decide to kill them or decide to let them go. Make that choice. But like, they framed it in a movie in a theatrical kind of sense it makes sense to do this, but also at the same time it's kind of a bummer because I grew attached to both these characters. I didn't want either of them to die. I didn't want to kill the one. I was bummed out about that.
You guys played like the same person each time?
Yeah, we played the same character each time. So I was Vincent both times, he was Leo. The other thing that I didn't like is it wasn't that it was bad. It was just awkward. When Vincent shoots Leo in the chest and Leo drops to the ground and the fight's over, like Leo gives Vincent this look of recognition and puts his arm out, and Vincent puts his hand down and they shake like, yeah, we're buds, even though I just killed you. And it was just, it was weird. Because that's, like, to me, I'm like, why couldn't I just let him go? Why couldn't I have just been like, all right, I'm done. I'm just going to let him go. All right, punch me in the face, knock me out, shoot me in the leg, and then go. You'll never see me again. Because at the end, Vincent retires from the FBI, and, like, he ends up telling Leo's wife, like, oh, here's what happened, because you meet Leo's wife throughout it. And it's just like, They build up all of this like brotherly compassion and love for each other and like both characters just reacted in that end sequence that didn't really seem in character. Vincent didn't really react to how it seemed in character. Leo reacted a little to how it seemed in character, but it kind of felt like they just forced the issue to have both players fight each other. That combined with the issue that it is the entire game is split screen. During that final combat, I wasn't even trying, but I could see fully where he was just by my peripheral vision seeing his screen. Like, it would have been a little bit more interesting if, like, had they been able to find a way to split the act to actually, like, maybe not share those screens anymore. But this game was meant to be played couch co-op, so there's no way they could have been able to do that. But other than that, the narrative of the game was great. It was a very fun game. It wasn't as puzzly as I was expecting it to be.
Really?
Yeah, there weren't really any puzzles. Like, there was one sequence that was weird where you have to torture information out of a foreman, a worksite foreman. And it was just pretty much, here's a bunch of things, quote, torture him until he talks. And so we would grab the things and we would walk up to him like, I got this thing and I'm going to do a thing to you if you don't tell us where it's going to be. And then you drop it and you go grab another thing. And it was like that was awkward and kind of unnecessary. And then, yeah, it was mostly sequences like that. Like, oh, we need to repair this car. Let's lift the car. Let's put the wheels on. Let's screw it tight. Let's charge it. But like, it wasn't really any puzzle to it. It was just, oh, the game marks where everything is, so you just go pick it up and put it where you need to put it and do what you need to do. It wasn't like puzzle solving.
Oh, yeah, I assumed it would have had more puzzle.
Yeah, one of the cooler sequences in the game, though, is there's a sequence in a hospital, and this is like the only time it's ever done this, where both characters are trying to escape the hospital in different routes, and so instead of having it split screen, it would have Leo be controlled for a bit. And then it would phase away from Leo and have Vincent be controlled for a bit. Full screen the entire time they're doing. I was like, this is a really cool, like, because it's like a no-cut sequence where, like, it just goes from here to, like, one of the cool transitions was Vincent runs off into a door and it transitions into the security camera where it shows Leo in another situation. And I was like, this is like a really neat sequence. But like, there wasn't really too many of those like cool sequences like that. But it was overall, the game was fun.
That's good. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's good. The other game I have to talk about, or games technically, is Poppy Playtime Chapter 1 and 2. Poppy Playtime is a mascot horror game, kind of like Five Nights at Freddy's and stuff, but this game takes place in, it's essentially like a factory that develops these toys, these Poppy toys, and it's not even Poppy toys, I can't remember the actual toy names, but all of the toys that are in this game are taking reference of other, like, other kids, children's toys. I can't remember the villain from Chapter 2's name. But she was Betty Spaghetti, basically. So she was like a proxy of what Betty Spaghetti would be in this world.
What the fuck is Betty Spaghetti?
Betty Spaghetti is a girl's toy or a children's toy where her arms and legs are like all wrapped in like, or are all like corkscrew wrapped around and they can like kind of stretch.
Is that a modern toy? Because I've never heard of that before.
I mean, it's not old, but it's not new. Like, it was around our time.
Oh yeah, I've never fucking heard of that before.
All right, so not corkscrew arms, but like they can stretch and they're easily bendable and movable, and that's what this like this creature was supposed to be. I can't remember its name right now. I'm gonna look it up to see if I can figure it out. It's like Mama something, Mama Spider or something. I don't remember. But the whole point of the two games is like you enter into this factory, and you're trying to, everyone who was in this factory X amount of years ago were just there, or happened to just vanish one day. and no one knows what happened to them, and you are an employee, a former employee of this factory, and you go in, and you're going in to find out what happened. And you you are getting chased by this big toy, Hugsy, I think is what it's called, which is like this big, tall, blue thing, super scary looking. And that's like really what the game is you, there's some puzzle solving. It's a horror game. So there's puzzle solving and running away from whatever creatures you're running away from. The puzzles are good and intuitive, and they're interesting. There are some things that I wouldn't have been able to figure out right away. Would have taken me a few tries if I hadn't had people spoiling the game for me in my chat. I'm probably going to be shutting off YouTube chats and on my live streams. I don't want to, but I'm probably going to have to, because there are a bunch of little kids coming in my stream. And, like, this is the only game they've ever had played, basically, or that all they do is watch people play this game. And when I mean little, I mean, like, 10 years and younger. Even though I have my stream set to not for kids, and now I even have it set to 18 plus for my streams, these kids are still watching, which means they're using an adult's account, or they just don't have their birth date on their account. Or maybe it's saying you have to be 18 years or older to watch, and they just click yes. I don't know. But like there was one sequence where I'm running away from the villain in Playtime 2, and you have to hide from her at one point. I couldn't figure out how to hide from her. And so the idea is to run and then hide inside like a furnace, which I'm like, man, you don't want to hide in a furnace because it could turn the furnace on. Why wouldn't you, if you're trying to murder the thing, turn the furnace on just in case they're in the furnace? Like, to me, it doesn't make sense to hide in the furnace. But yeah, it's an interesting game. The story, is they were testing out kids to see like how smart they are or something, and all the kids are like probably orphaned or something like that. I don't 100% know, but it is very interesting lore that I do want to read up on. The first game is free. Chapter 1 is free. However, it's only about 45 minutes to an hour long, depending on how long it takes you to play. Chapter 2 is about $10, something like that. Yeah, $10. And chapter 3 is like $15, and they get progressively longer. They're all not just an hour long.
Okay.
Chapter 2 took me about 2 hours or so to beat. And they have just some fun little puzzles and things like that to try to figure out. And it was really cool.
Was it scary? Did you get scared?
There were a few times that like I did react to being scared. It's very atmospheric. So there are like some tense moments in general. There's not a lot of real jump scares, or at least unexpected jump scares. After you reach a certain point, when you replay a sequence so many times, trying to figure out how to escape from something, it doesn't become scary anymore when they catch you.
That's fair, yeah.
But there were a few times where like I did get a little bit of a fright or a little bit of a jump, but it was more of the atmosphere of the game that really got me scared than it was the actual jump scares in game itself.
Cool. Anything else you want to say?
No, I'll be doing Poppy Playtime Chapter 3 probably this month at some point. So just keep an eye on my stream for that. And then I got to figure out a new horror game after the Poppy Playtime series. But yeah, if you're gonna play Poppy Playtime on YouTube Live, make sure little kids don't see that you're playing Poppy Playtime on YouTube Live. Because I had one like straight up spoil the game for me as I'm in the middle of playing it. Like, oh, you don't want to trust such and such character. They're bad. They're going to be a bad person. Don't spoil the game. I'm not spoiling it. You just don't trust them. No, you just straight up spoiled not to trust this character. You straight, like at one point, they're like, they're not going to let you go. I'm like, you literally just spoiled the game by saying this character is not going to let me leave. Before the character doesn't let me leave. I had to time out one because they kept demanding me to do this, do that, go here, go there, do this. I'm like, first of all, you are at a 1.5 minute delay. So you telling me where to go is making me backtrack. Stop that. I can't do that. Stop telling me where to go. And then it was the last one, the other time, like I said, like I was trying to figure out how to run away and I just saw them say, hide in the furnace. And I'm like, I guess I gotta hide in the furnace. I timed out one of them, and then that's when I started putting my streams to 18 plus. And yeah, it was a pain.
Yeah, that sounds vaguely annoying. Mm-hmm. But Drew, what is this new hockey game you're playing?
I got back into playing NHL 94 online with like the still the NHL94.com still going strong.
How do you get your Sega Genesis on the internet?
I mean, we use emulators, you know.
Do you own a physical copy of it still?
Yes, somewhere in this house is a physical copy of it, I'm pretty sure.
Good, you're not.
I know my brother has at least two copies as well, but yeah, my brother got back into playing in leagues back in the fall, and there were a few times where when like getting ready for playoff series or whatever, he asked me to jump on and just play the team that he was about to play against and just give him a little warm up. And, you know, he was beating me most of the games because he had gotten like all the little tricks kind of built back up. And like, I can even go back and looking at his record, like the regular season, he did okay. He was like 26-14 or something, but then went 12-0 in the playoffs. Or,
oh damn.
No, he went 12-2 in the playoffs to win the championship, but he swept in the first round, won in six games in the second round, and then swept in the championship. So clearly as the season went on, he started to get better and better.
Yeah. Good for him.
So that made me like be like, all right, you know what? I've been in the lurking basically in the Discord that they have for like 3 years now. And like at one point last year, my brother was like, oh, yo, get in here. I'm like, dude, I've been in there for like 2 years. What are you talking? I just like would lurk, like I said. And finally, I was like, okay, I'll get back into shit. I played 9 games last night and won all 9. I'm 13-2 right now after 15 games. And so for this season, they split the leagues up a little more to have smaller leagues, so more people would have the better teams. Most of the time, and including like the last season when my brother played, they did like A, B, and C tiers, but then like the A tier was split into 2 groups and the C was split into 3 where my brother was, and all those were like 10 to 12 team leagues. This year they've done, the Genesis has leagues A through H, so what's that, 1, 2, 3, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, 8 Genesis leagues, with either 7 or 8 teams in all of them. So there's like 63 or so people, 60 some people signed up for Genesis leagues, and I'm in group E with my brother, and they did a little like draft special thing showing who was all in what. And when they did the group E, the two dudes running it were like, oh, New Jersey Killer and I Am Drew might run away with this. I Am Drew hasn't played in a decade, but he was real good when he used to play. And then after my 9-0 yesterday, the one dude was like, oh, maybe we should have respected you more and put you higher. I'm like, dude, I didn't think I was going to jump out to a fucking 13-2 start. Like,
nice.
And plus, like I said, they put me in with my brother who won his league last year. So it's like not like it was a crazy spot to have put me. But yeah, I'm off to a fire start. And like they've gotten real deep with shit. There's a dude who has like a ratings system. My like the ELO rating, they call it. I'm trying to think of like what other things call it. I feel like that might be a thing, but you know, like the matchmaking rating essentially. Mine went up 155 points, and the dude was like, I'm glad I set up this bot to handle 3-digit increases.
Nice. that's quite the climb there too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you win 9 straight games, it's gonna increase rating a lot. And then he was like, I don't know what would happen if you jumped over 1,000 points in a day. I'm not sure if I accounted for that scenario. And I was like, challenge accepted, but also not really, because if I went up 155 by winning 9 games, that means I would probably have to win like 40 games in a day to get to 1,000 plus. And that's probably, that's a lot of games to play in a day.
I mean, how long does a game usually take?
I mean, not that long. We play 5-minute periods, at least in the Classic League. So, like, Classic League is just using the base ROM. People do all sorts of ROM hacks and updated rosters or redraft of leagues and whatnot. But I'm just playing in the Classic League right now. So 5-minute periods, no offsides, penalties are on. But, you know, I'm also pretty – I don't think 5 minutes is actually even 5 minutes. I think the clock runs slightly fast. But
okay.
Even if it is actually 5 minutes.
It's 5 minutes.
With goals and all, maybe a game takes 20, 25 minutes. But that's probably, again, even stretching it.
Right.
I feel a little bad for one of the... I played all 6 of my games that I had with one guy and then 3 with another guy. I kind of feel bad for the guy I played 6 with. He, I don't know, is ever going to want to play against me or my brother again. He's now 16-0 in games against me and my brother. Or 0-16, I should say. He has not beaten me or my brother at all.
Oh, that's funny.
And it's like, oop.
So you two are now his nemesis?
Yeah, I think so. even if he said otherwise, I think there's a little bit of like, please don't put me in a league with them anymore.
As it should be.
But yeah, it's been fun getting back into it. You know, there's a lot of people in that Discord from back on the forum days and fucking AIM and whatnot. So fun to reconnect with some people after like a decade.
Nice. Wow, has it been that long since you played it?
The last time I was in a league was spring 2013. So like, oh, 11 wow. years. Yeah.
Damn.
Yep.
So I feel like you played it like more like that you were in a league more recently than that.
You know, it felt like it, but nope. The went back and looked and it was 2013 because I still have all that's up on the website. And so it's Damn. Fun to be able to go back and look. Although I'm just mad that back then they don't have the statistics for.
So you could go back and look and see how you did.
Like, I can see my record, but I can't see what my players individually did, where they've, like, updated the website and the tool that scrapes the save state to pull all the data from to pull all the player stats out of now, too.
Even that, though, is actually pretty cool, the fact that it actually, like, still has, like, something.
Yeah, right?
Like, from 10 years ago?
Mm-hmm. I just want to know... How did I win 30 games as the Flyers? They're a kind of bad team in 1993, but the first season I ever played in anything, I was the Flyers, and I went 30-10 in my 40 games. So I'm like, how the fuck did I do that well with the fucking Flyers? But I don't know, because like we didn't pull those kinds of stats. So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like those games were coded differently back then, too.
Yeah, and then, like I said, the tools that they use to, like, scrape all the info out of a fucking ROM save state, it's pretty wild that you can just upload this ROM save state and it instantly pulls all this detail out of it.
Yeah, it's cool what people figure out how to do with that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Well, anything else you want to say about NHL 94?
Nah, I mean, if anyone ever played NHL 94 back in the day, there's a Facebook group, there's website, there's a Discord. Join. Come play. There's new people joining all the time. They specifically recently started doing a new players league. So, you know, always Excellent. Cool to get more people in.
Excellent. And unless you guys have anything else, that's probably it for this week.
That seems good.
Rich?
No, that's it.
Okay. Well, you were quiet. I didn't know if you were looking something up you wanted to say.
No, I missed. I was scratching my ear and just wasn't paying attention.
Excuses. So in 2 weeks we will be watching Dr. Strangelove for our book club. Next week we have a special episode where we talk about Daggerheart, the Critical Role new tabletop system.
Darrington Press is their game. Development team, so it's there.
Nobody knows that, though.
Critical Role knows. Anyone who knows Critical Role knows that, and it's just want to be as accurate as possible.
I know even who Critical Role is. I had no idea that it was called Darrington Press.
Even though it's owned by Critical Role Incorporated, it's Darrington Press is their game development team, and they made a bunch of games, and they have made the Daggerheart game system.
Yeah. So next week we'll have a special episode talking about that while I am away. Hopefully that all goes up on time. I already have the stuff scheduled. What can be scheduled, at least. But other than that, if you'd like to find more of our content, you can head over to www.one-quest.com. You can also help us out by supporting us at patreon.com/onequest. If you can't support us there with dollars, though, you can go to your favorite podcast platform, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. Rate us, review us, subscribe. It all helps. You can also find us on social media, facebook.com/onequestonline or at @one_quest on Instagram and Twitter. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/onequestvideo, and you can always send us an email to social@one-quest.com. And Rich, what's your streaming look like?
Twitch.tv/b_walnuts. We're on video game streaming Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday. Next, either Monday or Tuesday, depending on if I beat Final Fantasy VII Rebirth this weekend or not, I will be doing a Lethal Company stream on the 8th or the 9th. And we will be for sure starting some Helldivers 2 content on Tuesday the 16th. I'm going weeks ahead because we're not going to have the live updates. But it's mostly going to be that, and if we do end up beating Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, we're jumping back into Monster Hunter World because I never actually beat everything in Monster Hunter World.
Fun times. And yeah, with that, we will be back next week with something else to talk about. Thanks for listening. Bye.
See you.
Bye.